Welcome to the Harrison Faith Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor Brian Herring. It's our prayer this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
Last week, we started in with this idea of Job and talking about pieces and how the lies can seem to fall apart at times. And let me just kind of do a lead-in. I know that looks kind of eerie and spooky, the shadows, but Sunday morning, you want to be here, and it's a great time to invite a friend that's going through a struggle. We're going to dive into 1 Peter. We're going to go through the book of 1 Peter over the next four Sundays, and it is written during a dark and perilous time of the church. It's written during a very time of heavy persecution, and how Peter addresses that during this time. You want to invite a friend. It's a good time for people who are going through some difficult times to be there. So make sure you just have that in mind as you're coming Sunday to church. And you'll have extra sleep, so you'll feel so refreshed to bring somebody with you with that extra hour of sleep. We're going to be in Job chapter 2 tonight. We're going to kind of talk about suffering doesn't always make sense to us, but sometimes it can serve a purpose. And last week we talked about how Job, wonderful man, he's going along his life. He's got everything. He is literally the perfect family. I mean, we talk about, oh, they seem like they have the perfect family. No, this guy was the perfect family. He had money, wealth. He had a nice home. His kids got along. They had dinners and meals with each other all the time. They would rotate whose responsibility it was. Said none of every kid ever from any other household. But, you know, these kids actually shared responsibility. No, it's my turn. I'll host this month. And so they did this. And life was just going on. And Satan approaches, of course, with this council of angels that God is meeting with, and he basically says, yes, that's because you got a hedge of protection around it, but if you remove that hedge, listen, he wouldn't do that. As a matter of fact, he would curse you to your face. And it goes through this whole idea, and as we know that he took away all of Job's possessions and even took away his kids, and at the end result, Job didn't curse. In fact, he blessed God for it and worshiped him. And so leading into this week, it's day two. And so here we go. Chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, says, one day the members of the heavenly court came again, and the story returns to the scene. Here's this heavenly court, the angels, celestial beings coming together, and Satan the accuser once again to present themselves before the Lord. And the accuser, Satan, came with them. Who keeps inviting him? That's what I want to know. You know, because when he shows up, nothing good ever happens. Matter of fact, he's the father of lies. The truth is not in him. So you know when he shows up, he's going to manipulate and lie and turn everything around. So it's never a good thing. So how he gets the invitation to this whole council, I don't know. But he decides, hey, I'm going to walk up. I don't know. Maybe it's like city council. It's scheduled on a certain night of the week. And since he was an angel once, he just keeps going back. I don't know. But for whatever reason, it says he came with them in verse 2. Where have you come from? The Lord said to Satan. And Satan answered to the Lord, I've been patrolling the earth, watching everything that is going on. Once again, he's the same question God answers Satan. He's once again just roaming through the earth. He's kind of just looking at what's going on, finding somebody to torment. And the Lord asked Satan, have you noticed my servant Job? He's the finest man in all the earth. Just like he did in verse 8 of chapter 1, here he is once again singling Job out. I think that all of us would say is, God, hey, don't single me out. Here he is. He lost all his possession. He lost his kids. Don't point me out anymore. Listen, I don't want to be that person. It's kind of like in school. You don't want the teacher to single you out even for good things, because then you get made fun of for that. So it's not a good thing. And he goes on and talks about all the great things that Job is. He is blameless, a man of complete integrity. He fears God. He stays away from evil. And he has maintained his integrity, even though you urge me to harm him without cause. So he says, I think in one side he's telling Satan, listen, you said if I allowed you to touch him, he would curse me to my face. So maybe it's kind of this kind of thing right here. Hey, so have you thought about Job lately? Didn't work out the way you thought, did it? And so he goes through this idea. Second day, Job's day of torment comes on the scene, and it just like in chapter 1, it repeats itself again. God holds a council. Satan returns and is asking if he's considered Job. Satan at this time has already considered Job. He's already come on him. In chapter 1, he takes his stuff and his possession, but he goes a step further and takes away all of Job's offspring, his descendants. And I've kind of put this in my notes because I think it's worth noting. No parent should ever have to bury their children. No parent should ever have to do that. Been a pastor for 23 years, and let me tell you, I've seen some horrible situations where family have lost kids through cancer. I've seen them lose them through accidents, through drownings, and no parent should ever have to bury their kids. And here's Job. He has to go through this deal. And so, you know, I think we live in a world of pain and suffering, and it causes us to ask the question, why? And that is the question of the book of Job. And to be honest, I'm not sure that when you read the entire book of Job, if you ever find an answer to the question of why we go through pain and suffering. All we know that later on in the book of Job that God tells us that he is God. And I think sometimes that's just enough, that he's just God. And we've got to understand that God is God. And because he's God, we've got to trust that he's got everything in his hand. God knows the big picture, even though we can only see small little increments. And so we got to have faith through that. In Romans chapter 8, verse 28, it says, "And we know that God causes everything to work together for the good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them." So we know that as we studied the book of Romans, that this is part of it, that God will make everything work out even if we can't see it on the side. And God gives the same testimony about Job that he gave in chapter 1. He's blameless. He is a man of complete integrity. He fears God, and he stays away from evil. So once again, he's bragging on him for the same reason. Nothing's changed. Persecution's come to his. He's lost everything he owns. He's lost his children, and he's still a blameless man. Nothing's changed in his character. So here we kind of end, right before we get into today's great events. And it's kind of outstanding when you think about it, that we've seen people go through things and it changes people. Adversity, suffering, pain, troubles, life doesn't work out the way you thought it was going to. Things didn't work out the way you thought it would. Just like the sister we've been praying for, she lost her house. Listen, things don't always work out the way you hope and the way you pray. So when things don't work out, the problem is we get frustrated, we get irritated. And when things don't work out, how do we respond? How do we react? Do we walk out of that situation blameless, with complete integrity? Do we still have fear of God, and do we still stay away from evil? In big problems, I've seen people do a lot of things, and they usually turn to something. They usually turn to someone or something or react a certain way, or they withdraw to themselves, but there's a reaction. But Job stays consistent in his walk. Verse 4, Satan replied to the Lord, "Skin for skin. A man will give up everything to save his own life." This word, this kind of idea, skin for skin, it's kind of an odd statement. But I've read several different kind of commentaries because I really want to get it. And there's one talked about an eye for an eye, one talked about this. But I think the best terminology I got, it was probably an expression of the world they were living in, bartering system, that it was animal skins. And Satan was suggesting that Job remained righteous because he didn't have any skin in the game yet. He hadn't really paid for it, and he hadn't really cost him anything yet. But if it cost him something like his health, if it cost him something personal to him, then all of a sudden, if he had skin in the game, then all of a sudden it would cause him to curse God and turn away. Verse 5, "But reach out and take away his health, and he will surely curse you to your faith." But removing Job's possessions and descendants didn't change anything for Job. It didn't make anything different. It didn't cause Job to curse God. Satan believes that if you remove the blessings, and Job will directly curse him. And so he goes to this idea, if you take away his health. Verse 6, "All right, do to him as you please," the Lord said to Satan, "but spare his life." So God allows Satan to affect Job once again, but he puts limits on it, just like he did in verse 6 and verse 12 of chapter 1. "But spare his life," from Job's perspective. You got to imagine when it says spare, from Job's perspective, this wasn't merciful. We think do everything, but just save their life. This wasn't merciful. As a matter of fact, later on, he wishes for death. In chapter 3, verse 20 through 22, he literally prays for death. "Just kill me, just let me die." And so the idea of sparing his life with what he's about to go through, For Job, this wasn't a merciful act. In fact, it was worse. He wished he would just die. Have you ever known someone like that, that was in such pain, that was going through so many things, that they didn't necessarily want to not serve God, they didn't necessarily want to not love God, they just wish they would die? Lord, if this is the way life is going to be, then just kill me. Lord, if this is the way life is going to be from here on out, then just take me away. Lord, I don't want to have to live. If this is what living's all about, then this is what we go through. There's so much in this first two chapters of Job when you dive into the fact that relates to people that we know. And so Job's really kind of going through this idea that he doesn't even know what's going on, but he's going to go through a bunch of things, and later on he's going to say, I wish I was dead. Verse 7, so Satan left the Lord's presence and struck Job with terrible boils from his head to his foot, sores that covered his complete body. These boils, when you look at the Hebrew word, it literally means a burning sore. It was literally something that was torment. It wasn't just something that popped up. It was a burning sore that popped up on him. It's the same word that you used in Exodus chapter 9, verse 9 through 10, that talks about the plague, the sixth plague that came upon Egypt when it came upon them, that they were struck with terrible sores and boils on them. It's the same one that a single sore that affected King Hezekiah in 2 Kings chapter 20, verse 7. This was a painful sores that covered him from head to toe. Now, I got to tell you something. Most guys don't like to be in pain. We don't like admitting we're in pain. Can you imagine? Here he is, a good life, just lost everything, and all of a sudden he's covered in sores. He's in pain literally from the top of his head to the soles of his feet. And there is nothing but pain in his life. Job's pain becomes more personal at this point. So here we come. Job's pain is personal. It's no longer taking his stuff away. It's no longer just affecting the family around him. But now it's affecting his body and him physically. And right now he's suffering. And it takes on a whole other form. It's more than just losing possessions. It's more than just, all of a sudden now he's lost his health. Satan proclaims that when someone loses their health, they'll curse God, they'll turn away from him, and they'll no longer follow after him. And I think we'll find there's things true. People will travel the world looking for cures for cancer, for health, for different diseases. They will literally travel the world for this. And so the idea is that when we become in pain, we are very self-centered. We worry about us and us alone. Have you ever seen someone take a hammer and hit their thumb and think about someone else? Boom! How are you feeling today? Are you okay? No, of course not. You know, when we're in pain, we think, I'm in pain. I'm hurting. I'm awful. This is not a good thing. You got a headache? Well, God bless you. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of the whole thing we go through. It's this idea that when we're in pain, so Satan kind of thinks, if I hit him personally, he won't no longer be praising and worshiping God. He'll curse him because all of a sudden he'll become, and it all of a sudden to be thinking about his own pain. And through all this, God grants Satan power, but limited power. Again, he's displaying his sovereignty over this situation. Even though he's allowing things to happen, he's allowing what's going to go happen. He's putting the restraints and limits on what he's allowing. You can do it, you can touch him, but do not take his life. Then verse 8, it brings up the degree of the pain that he's in, and it brings up the degree of what's going on. As Job scrapes his skin with a piece of broken pottery, literally to relieve the itching that's all over his body and to break the sores that are in his body. He's literally taking broken pieces of pottery and just scraping at his skin as he sits among the ashes. Can you imagine? I mean, just for a moment, when I think about my suffering and my pain and I think about my problems, all of a sudden I want to be quiet because I'm thinking, yeah, I don't have it so bad. And here's Job. Again, no idea of the conversation that's happening in this godly council. No understanding that Satan's asking for an opportunity to go at him. Just no reasoning, no understanding, no philosophy. Nothing's changed. All of a sudden, he's just going about his life. He's just serving God. And all of a sudden, everything is falling apart. It's falling into pieces. And he has no idea. And yet his integrity and his character remains steadfast. There is no indication right here that Job was in isolation because of these boils, but probably to the fact that he was already removed himself from mourning. So a lot of times when you, as you know, or Old Testament law, if he would have had sores and open, he would have been taken outside the city and he would have been separated. But none of that was mentioned here, mainly because he was already removed himself. He was in such sorrow because of his kids that all of a sudden he moves himself outside to where the ashes are in the ash heap, and he's covering himself with the ashes. Then in verse 9 it comes in. And his wife says to him, this is the only place where Job's wife speaks. This is the only place in chapter 19, verse 17, it mentions his wife, but this is the only place she speaks. This is her contribution to history right here. Are you still trying to maintain your integrity? Curse God and die. Through all of this that's happening to you, are you trying to remain and keep your integrity? Just curse God and die. Just quit. Just stop. Why are you keeping on? Just stop. And I will tell you again, studying this, something pulled out of this that I've never thought. We think the idea that this woman is merciless. She's cold-hearted, and she's just whatever. But the other idea is this. Maybe it's reflecting her idea not to see her husband in pain anymore. Maybe instead of this being a cold woman saying, just curse God and die, and that attitude, maybe the idea is seeing her husband lose everything he has, lose all his family, and now he's struck from head to toe with boils. Maybe it's out of compassion. She's saying, listen, just stop. If you'll curse God, he'll take your life. Just let it end already. Because that's the thought I think of right now when I see a lot of people seeing family members suffer in nursing homes and sickness and cancer being eat up. They're just like, Lord, I'd just rather you take them than see them suffer. Lord, I'd rather see that as much as I love them and as much as I want them healed, if your plan is not to heal them, then Lord, take them. And you see people, and you see people come up here and they pray with us pastors and they pray at these altars and they pray in their prayer closet saying, Lord, I don't want to see them suffer. Whatever you got to do, don't let them suffer anymore. Because the suffering is worse than the loss. Verse 10, but Job replied, you talk like a foolish woman. You know, I'll tell you, some people in pain can get away with things they say. Men walking up to your wife tonight and say, you talk like a foolish woman, will not go well for you. You will need to be in marriage counseling. He says, you talk like a foolish woman. And he's not calling her a fool. He's saying what she's saying is foolish. Should we accept only the good things from the hand of God and never anything bad? And then this just next phrase just gets me. So in all of this, Job said nothing wrong. Brian might have. Brian probably did. If he didn't say it out loud, he said it in his head. He said it in his heart. You remember what we talked about in chapter 1 last week? Job prayed for his kids just in case they cursed God in their heart. Even if they didn't say it, just in the idea that they might have done something wrong, he was offering sacrifices for them to keep them pure because he was a dad that prayed to God for them, and he was a dad that prayed for their salvation, and so he offered sacrifices for them. Here's a dad that loved them, that just in case they might have accidentally cursed God in their heart, he wanted to make sure they were okay. Can we say we're like that? I'm just answering for me. I don't want to call y'all a bunch of people, you know, like, but I'm just telling you, there's things I've gone through that are much less, and I think that's sorry, sucking dog. I tell you, Lord, if you just want to hit them today, okay, y'all are holy. I'm just telling you, Pastor Brian's in the world, he's fleshly, I guess, but I repent, but I'm just saying, I have those moments where I'm not always thinking holy things. Sometimes I got to pray and I got to say, Lord, forgive me for my attitude about that person. Forgive me for that thought. Forgive me. But in the moment, but Job said nothing. In all of this, Job didn't say anything wrong. In this brief speech to his wife, he recognizes God's sovereignty, as he did in chapter 1, verse 21, when Job points out that he is the creator and he gives and he takes away as he pleases. Although he doesn't understand it, Job views suffering as part of God's plan. This is in contrast to Job's friends who are claiming that they understand God's purpose, view as a part of God's punishment that we're going to get into in just a minute. The foolishness of Job's wife, here we go. This is the only time we hear her speak, and she doesn't offer great counsel. Remember, he's a man of complete integrity who fears God and stays away from evil. And what this tells us is what we must discern in wisdom and counsel to come from us. Because here's what we understand. This is worth writing down for you note takers. Just because people are close to us doesn't mean they will always give us the best advice. Just because someone's close to us doesn't mean they always give us the best advice. We assume because they love us, because they care for us, because they've been a part of our life for such a long time, because of all this, because they are intimately known with us, they'll give us the best advice, but that's not always true. Just because people are close to you doesn't mean that they're going to give you the best advice. That's where you need godly discernment, godly wisdom, and godly just to be able to pray and seek God's face. And that's what Job does. We all need wise counsel. Job needed it. Job is no exception. But through all of the book of Job, there is only one who gives him the wise counsel that he needs, and that's God. You search the entire book, and all you'll find is God is the only one who actually gives him the counsel that he really needs. Job does not give his wife wise counsel, though when he says to her, should we only accept good things from God's hand and never anything bad? Here's the lessons we learned, because Job speaks wise, his wife speaks foolishness. The things we can learn from the foolishness: one speaks foolish when he rejects the existence of God. When you get to the point where you reject the existence of God, that's foolishness. One speaks foolish when he is willing to give away the eternal for the temporal. And he speaks foolish when he thinks that there is no life beyond this one. But here's what we can learn from the three lessons from wisdom. One speaks wise when he acknowledges the lordship of God. One speaks wisdom and wise things when he knows the future is in God's hands. And the third thing is, he speaks wise when he lives for God's kingdom rather than for his own. And that's what Job did. Job literally lived for God's kingdom. When everything was lost, when everything he gained. Remember, he was a wealthy man, more wealthy than anybody that we read about in the Old Testament, except for Solomon later on. We read through all these things, and here he is, a very wealthy man, lost all his wealth, lost all of his kids, all of his children, and now he's losing his health. And yet, here he is. He's willing to trust God through it all. In the first two chapters, Job is commended for what he says. In chapter 1, verse 22 last week, it says, in all of this, Job did not sin by blaming God. And then just now in verse 10, so in all of this, Job said nothing wrong. The book of James goes into depth about speaking and the importance of taming the tongue. But we're going to move on. Verse 11 in chapter 2, he says, when three of Job's friends heard the tragedy he had suffered, they got together and they traveled from their homes to comfort and to counsel him. And then it says their names. But my wife tells me not to try to pronounce their names. So Job's friends. Y'all don't make it any better on me when y'all do that. Okay, so Job's friends come with him with good intentions. They're here to comfort him, and they're going to go through this. However, their words bring little comfort to him during this time to Job. So verse 12, and when they saw Job from a distance, they scarcely recognized him. Wailing loudly, they tore their robes and threw dust in the air over their heads to show their grief. This is a typical gesture of mourning. So here they are. They walk up to him. He's covered from head to toe with sores. He's covered and he's sitting in an ash heap. They walk up on him and they don't even recognize him. And where I've never seen someone like that covered in head, I've seen people that are sick. I've seen somebody so eaten up with cancer that when I saw them the next time, I didn't even recognize them. They lost so much weight through the chemo. They didn't look like themselves. Their face sunken in. And it took me a little minute to realize who they were. Of course, the other side is true, too, where you've seen someone so sick that when they get well, you don't recognize them when they walk in the door, which is a great problem also. And so they didn't recognize him. They walk up. He's in such bad shape on the outside. He's up there, and they hear him wailing, and they say, that's Job. So they walk over, and so in mourning to go with him. These are good friends at this point. They mourn with him, and they throw ashes over their head, and they begin to cry out in grief with him. Verse 13, then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and nights, a typical period of mourning. And no one said a word to Job, for they saw his suffering was too great for words. As a pastor, I won't say I had the honor, but I had the responsibility to go talk to someone and been in horrible situations. Someone committed suicide. They lost a parent. Matter of fact, just a few years ago, I had to go talk to some girls who lost their dad. And I'll tell you, in those moments, you try to find the words to say, but it's almost like that. It's just so quiet because you don't know what to say because their grief is so heavy. It's an atmosphere that's so in the moment that Job's friends wait until Job speaks. The silence was probably part of the mourning ritual, but here they are. When they speak, Job wishes that they would have remained silent. You can find that later on in Job chapter 13, verse 5. He says, if only you could be silent, that's the wisest thing you could do. So they stay silent for him later on. And then later on, when they finally do speak, he just wishes they would have been quiet all along. Job's friends do have an example to follow. So I want to show you a few things. Three friends that Job gives us example to follow. First of all, not to open their mouths. But before that, they had heard that in this adversity, what had happened to them, and they came from their towns. They came and traveled. Sometimes when somebody's in pain, all you can do is be there for them. So when they heard that Job was in pain, before they got to him, before they just came, and they just wanted to be there to help him. They came together to go offer sympathy and comfort to him. And so their actions were fivefold. Here they are. They came to him. They wept with him. They tore their robes. They threw dust in the air and on themselves. I didn't know what was all on the screen, so let me just say that again. They came to him. They wept with him. They tore their robes. They threw dust in the air and on themselves. And they sat in silence with Job for a week. So here it is. Job is at a loss. He is mourning his family. He's lost all his possessions. He's in pain from the head to toe. And the friends come with him, and they're just with him for 7 days. You know, there's times where someone who's lived a long life, a full life, and you go to the funeral home, and it's kind of a celebration of their life. People are laughing, they're reminiscing, they're telling old stories. It's a family reunion, they're joking around, they're going through things, and they're doing it. And then there's times where someone lost, and their life was taken too soon and too quickly. And you walk in there, and there's a silence, there's an eeriness. It was all of a sudden, nobody saw it coming. They just sat in the room, no words to say, nothing to do. And here's for Job's friend. I wrote this down because I just feel like it needs to be our prayer. Oh Lord, when I see suffering from others, may it move me to action. Oh Lord, when I see suffering or the suffering of others, may it move me to action, because I feel like that needs to be the prayer. Because sometimes when people are suffering, people are hurting. We have great pastors and great ministries in this church that when people are hurting, they surround them. And I'm thankful for that because I don't know what I would do. When people lose a loved one or they go through sicknesses and disease and they don't have a church home and a church family, I don't know what they do because I don't know what I would do without you guys. I don't know what other people do without this church because it's sometimes you need people who are just willing to cry with you. Sometimes you need people who are just willing to sit with you and say nothing at all. Sometimes you just need people to be there. I'm going to close with just two different scriptures here. First one's in Romans chapter 5, verse 3 through 5, and the second one is James 1, chapter 1, verse 2 through 4. But in Romans chapter 5, verse 3 through 5, it says this, "We can rejoice too when we run into problems, into trials, for we know that they help us develop endurance, and endurance develops strength of character, and character strengthens our confident hope of salvation. And this hope will not lead to disappointment, for we know how dearly God loves us, because He has given the Holy Spirit to fill our hearts with His love." And then the second one is James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4. "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. When your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing." So when adversity comes and problems come, and sometimes it feels like we're swept on every side, seems like we're pressed but not crushed, persecuted but not abandoned. Seems like we're just about ready to give up. But what it does is it builds endurance. Athletes understand this. That's why they train with weights, because resistance builds strength, which builds muscle, which builds endurance. Running and pushing themselves beyond the point that they can breathe pushes and allows their lungs to expand and cause endurance so that they can go and for longer distance. Athletes understand this, but our spiritual man works the same way. The more we face adversity, it builds endurance, and our faith grows because we can't rely on our own self, because there's a point when you're facing adversity, it's not what you can handle, it's what He can handle. And when you get to the point where you say, "God, I can't do anything else," that's when He says, "Finally, I can step in and I can do something," because strength is learning our weakness and leaning fully upon Him. It's been said before that Christ is a stretcher, not a crutch. You got to fully lean on Him and trust Him. You can't just use Him as a little crutch to help you along when you want Him. It's a full reliance. It's a full hope in Him. It's a full confidence in Him that He's going to carry you through it. It's not just a crutch that He's just going to get you through. Because this means because a crutch allows me to put most of it, the reliance on me, but a stretcher requires me to rely everything on the people carrying me. He wants fully confidence in Him and His ability alone.